Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
It is toy department time, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. What's going on in your world today?
Jacked up on cold brew coffee. The baby has actually been sleeping a little later, at least as far as it affects me, which is nice. So I feel like maybe a little more well-rested. He is pushing 15 months, just past the 14-and-a-half-month mark, which, you know, as a non-parent, the whole month thing really messed me up and annoyed me when parents did it. But now as a parent, I realize it's the only way to reasonably reflect his age, you know?
Yeah. Because the months do matter at that age, right?
Hugely.
Like, you know.
A ton. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. You know, now that I'm a new uncle, everything's changed, right? So.
Of course. Yeah. No, I mean, your life is just different. It's not what it was before. Fuller, you know.
You mark the time pre-uncle and then post-uncle, right? So.
That's exciting for you, and I am excited for you. I am on the child rearing front. I am essentially taking my son to the zoo for the first time coming up on Monday. I'm very excited about it.
I saw that on the Twitter. Yeah, that'll be a fun one. My family's a big zoo family, so I heartily endorse. You getting them outside in front of some wild animals,
right?
And also supporting zoos, which I don't think are doing real well in the current economic environment.
No, in fact, we joined the Oakland Zoo. We are members now of the Oakland Zoo in an effort to help support. I think we've talked about this before. I'm generally actually not the hugest zoo guy, but I love the work that they do conservation-wise, and I am very excited to introduce my son to wild animals. Because we did go there, but he was too young. He really wasn't old enough I'm not entirely sure he had fully grasped object permanence at the time he went to the zoo. So
yeah. He's not at a point where he can identify, you know, tiger or elephant or anything like that yet, right?
He can identify Ozzy, which is my dog.
Gotcha.
And just a couple days ago, he said his first, I think, meaningful mama. Because he does say ma, ma, ma and da, da, da a lot, but he's not talking about us. He's just babbling until I think yesterday or the day before he actually did call my wife mama, which was very exciting.
It's great. Couple months he'll be able to do a 15-minute call-in segment.
Well, that's the thing. That's what's scary is, like, it's kind of nice that he's just babbling now, because, you know, what it'll really be in a month or two is he'll be saying so many more things that he's sure are words that we still won't totally be able to understand. And
right.
It's going to be a struggle to communicate in a way that now he's just like pointing around and yelling. But yeah, dogs and my wife are pretty much the only thing he can identify at the moment. I do think he will be like, oh my God, what are those things? Just not with those words.
Right. Well, we are, we're going for a short show today, which means that we now won't have one, but
especially after a 5-minute chat about children and zoos to open the show.
That's right. Well, that's what people come here for, is the children and zoo content. We're going to talk about the Rosamund Pike movie Radioactive this week. Room 104's return. A bunch of sports chat. And, of course, the challenge. Do you want to start with sports or the challenge?
Let's start with the challenge, because I don't think this will. Usually we spend 40 minutes on this, and I think we got less today.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is, you know, we talked about it last week. Like, this should have been one reunion episode, right?
100%.
That was an hour and a half, maybe, instead of
100%.
Even half, if it had two that were 2.5.
Right. Even if it had to be a 1-2 hour thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically slightly repackaged version of the shit they didn't show you, right?
That's exactly.
Which is a show that
it's not even really repackaged. They just took the shit out. I mean, literally the word shit they took out.
Yeah, you're right. Basically, and I actually would say that I probably enjoyed it better on the whole than the reunion.
You know, I had a prior. Thought. I had a thought watching this, and honestly, it wouldn't have. It wouldn't have necessarily helped this season. But imagine if they treated the reunion like the Pro Bowl and it happened the week before the finale.
Yeah. That's kind of how they do The Bachelor, actually.
Oh, yeah.
The reunion show the week before the finale. And then the kind of like the Pro Bowl, right, where the participants who are still competing are not really on the reunion show.
Right.
Yeah,
because that would
and
only
then, and then say everybody else.
Or they're on it and they just play coy and cut around who won, you know?
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they still bring the Bachelor or Bachelorette out, you know, for that kind of thing. Yeah, it's the same. It would be the same deal. I agree.
Right.
That would be a smarter way to do it.
Because it does feel anticlimactic. And in fact, I thought this, even if they had flipped the two halves of the reunion, it would have been less anticlimactic. Because the clip show to end it feels like sort of fading away, and so to speak. This is how the world ends, not with a bang. But
well, it's not four or five straight episodes that have really sort of felt like a little bit
I mean, it's down, at least three, you know, right? I thought the penultimate one was pretty good, but it's at least three episodes that have been a petering out as opposed to a
crescendo
finish. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, that's a bummer. And I, now that it is complete and has happened, I think I can say, and I imagine I speak at least a bit for both of us when I say I just don't like how they handled the D situation. Not because I'm caping for D, but because I think it torched the show a little bit. And I don't know that what she did. Look, there are things people could say, especially, you know, in the arena that she stepped into of dangerously racist stuff, there are things people could say that I would feel like, I don't care what it does to the show, get her the F out of here, right? And I don't feel like that's what happened. I feel like their reaction drew more attention and did very little to solve anything.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of feel like, look, if you are familiar with any of our work or follow either of us on social media, you know what I mean? Like, we are people who, like, if we're not bothered enough to be like, get her out of here, you know what I mean? Then I don't know who would be, to be honest.
Like,
I don't
I don't think either of us have ever complained about the PC police or, you know, talked about a slippery slope into respecting each other, you know, like, we are not those people. And I think we both agree with MTV that what D said is not good and should have been responded to, but I'm not sure the response fit the comment.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And certainly not to the point of like this just whole weird awkwardness, you know what I mean? And even in this, a show where I think, you know, that was a little bit more about being honest with, you know, about sort of confessional. You know what I mean? Like, it feels weird not even talk about her there,
right?
You know?
Of all the reunions to talk about her, the one where no one's in the same place, they're all having, like, an online dialogue, for God's sakes. Isn't that the perfect time to talk about an offensive moment within the cast? I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm really surprised. I haven't even seen anyone talking about it on like a podcast or anything, which makes me think maybe they've been told to say nothing.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I would think the Kansas City mob would have to have some opinion about all of this.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, if Wes and Bailey and Swaggy are close, how has this not come up? How is there not like a, I don't know, man. It just, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And it makes me wonder if there's more to the story somehow or what's going on.
Yeah. Well, it definitely seems like there's a little bit more to the story. Like, this episode made me feel like maybe I need to follow some of these people on Instagram.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're actually a pretty good amount of challenge nuggets sort of happening on the gram.
Yeah, I'm so bad at Instagram. Like, I don't follow anyone in the way you would have to track that sort of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My problem with Instagram, and it's like once every 2 weeks. An old guy complaint, you know, is like, can you show me the post of the people I follow in the order that they post them? Like, I don't, you know, so what's happened to my feed now, right? It's like, I follow a few accounts like House of Highlights or Girl Has No President that are like really popular.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So they,
and
just
so now
fill
the,
up your
right,
whole
the Instagram
feed.
Album, like, yeah, just that and like sneakers taking up my whole feed and I don't see pictures of my friends anymore. So, you know, I just want to see, like, I want to see all the content of the people that I'm following. That's the whole thing, right? So,
I think my problem with Instagram has always been how difficult it is to just look at the content of the people you follow in an aggregate form.
Yeah, like that. And I don't know why these social media, just do it this, all they should all do it this way, and none of them want to. I don't know what that's about.
Except Twitter. I mean, Twitter does still promote dumb stuff. But, like, for the most part, especially if I'm live on Twitter or, like, using TweetDeck, I can just track things as they happen, and that's what I like about it more than anything.
That's only if you're using it through a third-party app. Like, if you're using the regular Twitter app, it's giving you weird data. You know, there's an algorithm that gives you your timeline in a weird order.
No, that happens on the phone app. But, like, if you use TweetDeck, like, the app is designed so that you can get it to a place where it shows you sort of a timeline that's an actual timeline.
Yeah.
And you can't, there's no, I don't care if it's a third party app. If Instagram wanted to have a third party app, like tweet that, you know, if there was an Insta deck, I would look at that. But it's hard for me to process Instagram in its one and only form on my phone or iPad.
Yeah, me too. That's why I'm spending less time there.
to be fair, I never got there. I never really spent time there.
This week's segment of old guys on social media.
Seriously. It's funny how you become the old guy. Because I still hold on to certain ways in which I hope never to become the old guy. But a thing like this, like, I feel no compulsion. And I probably should, career-wise. But I feel no compulsion to understand or become involved with, like, actual real Instagram. It's not for me.
I think that's how it happens. It's like gradually
Agreed.
You start to lose your curiosity about certain things. Like, or if you're like me, right? You're like, I want nothing to do with this TikTok, right? Like,
nothing.
I'm just not interested, right?
I don't
so,
need it.
Yeah, that's what happens. And then more and more TikToks in the world appear, and you opt out in more and more of those things. Until,
but if we just here's my thing,
you know
if
what
we
I mean?
Just and maybe this is just being old, but if we if we plot on a graph, the transition from, just as a sort of random example, Twitter to Instagram to TikTok, I feel like we are not only moving forward in time and technology, but we are also moving backward in the ability to use it for anything other than escapist content. Like Twitter at some level is a tool for a variety of things, news, marketing.
Right, that's
whatever.
Why I like it.
Yeah, Instagram is that to some extent, but also it's just pictures of ass. And then TikTok to me is like pretty pure silliness, or Snapchat, right? Like, I don't know what is being accomplished by anyone there.
Well, I think, you know, I don't know. people will tell you that TikTok is some amazing thing where people are doing, you know, all sorts of revolutionary communication and even political talk and whatever.
I guess I'm skeptical of that.
And, you know, I have friends who keep sending me like, isn't this great? You know, I'm spending hours on this. And I'm always like,
well, and okay, sometimes it's great, but I feel like the funny ones will get to me on Twitter and I'll be okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, beyond Sarah Cooper's Trump impression,
right?
You know,
like and just like there was, we had Vine, you know, and we've had things like this, and I'm not bashing it. I don't know what it's for other than creating cute, funny content.
Right. And you know, some people are way into cute, funny content, I guess. And that's
cute, funny content's cool. I'm not opposed to it.
That was a little bit of a detour.
Well, that tells you how uninteresting this episode of the Challenge Reunion was. Sure, there was sex we didn't know about, mostly between women. And that's all fine and good. Congratulations to them. I hope they're happy.
Yeah, there were a couple like weird relationship things too.
Uh-huh.
You know, the whole Nelson relationship thing, I think was sort of
did not know there was a Nelson Angela thing. But not shocked. And
that Corey was like not at all on board with it, I thought was interesting.
I am more and more into like the whole Corey Nelson thing, and also Nelson is just spectacularly doofusy. I don't even know if calling him spectacularly stupid is correct or fair.
Doofus is, I think, the right word.
He's,
you know,
such
what I mean?
A doofus, man. It's incredible. He just, at every turn, he says or does the wrong thing, but he's a sweet boy, and he always feels bad and apologizes. And then he says these things like, you know, like, oh, man, everybody's always apologizing or something. And you're like, no, it's mostly just you because you do the wrong thing every time. Every time. It's so funny. And he's just not – he's too much of a doofus to be, like, introspective or anything like that. So he's just going to cruise through his life trying and doing the wrong thing and apologizing over and over again. And it makes for great TV.
It does. It does. You know what I think didn't necessarily make for great TV? Right? Like, everybody in the Holy Trinity keeps telling us there's kind of more at play.
Right.
In the Kayla Bear thing.
Right.
Right?
But what is it? And where's Bear?
But, like, they're clearly not willing to really spill what's happening there. And it's like, why are we doing this?
Yes. And they've – it's funny because they've drastically changed positions because during – the season, all those girls were like, she has a relationship at home and it's really important and I don't want her to ruin it. And then at the reunion, they're like, yeah, she needed to get out of that thing at home. So Bear was like a good Bear was a good transition to her new British boyfriend. And it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Did you notice that Nani had already softened her I'm not going to do reality TV anymore stance between
yes.
This reunion episode of this one.
And not only that, she had also replaced her veneer.
Yeah, correct. all right. I think we could wrap up the challenge there. I don't know if I have much more to add. That was probably one of the more revealing moments on the show. Yeah. I did. You know what? I will say, I thought Vernon Davis did a pretty decent job.
Yep.
Tying it all together. You know, he's mostly reading cue cards or whatever, but he does that better than TJ.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. He may be a better reader than TJ.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, like, Vernon Davis froze in the challenge, like, TJ forever.
Right, no, but I think TJ would.
You're just talking about reading cue cards.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I do think TJ wouldn't have to read cue cards the same way for this. I get the feeling they Vernon is a more natural talker. I mean, I've talked to Vernon Davis, you know, and he's not as like, stiff and he sort of had the feel of this was like the video project in Newscasting 101 or something, you know, that was a little bit off-putting to me, and I feel like he was sort of done an injustice by the format and probably the producers, but it wasn't so bad. I've softened on my Vernon Davis stance a little bit. It was a tough spot for him.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back to do some more stuff with the franchise if that happens.
I like Vernon.
So, although I have a feeling he'll try to worm his way into the ESPN, Fox Sports.
You never know, man. I mean, look at Strahan, right? Like maybe Vernon Davis really is a challenge super fan, and like the guy's not strapped for cash. So maybe this is what he wants to do. Who knows? Maybe
yeah.
MTV is his zone more than ESPN. That was always sort of the thing about Vernon, right? Is like, well, his life isn't all about football. Maybe he doesn't care enough. He was one of those guys. I mean, it's a stupid criticism, but it suggests he has broader interests.
We'll always have him singing Adele.
I'm saying, the guy has talents.
All right. I am very curious where you're at on Room 104, which came back for season 4. When we talked about doing this pre-show last week, and I don't know if this made it to the show or not, you weren't super excited necessarily about Room 104. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see, obviously there's only one episode that aired, but I'm curious to see what your take on this episode was.
I can't say I remember the episodes I watched in season 1, which was most of it. But that was a few years ago, and I can't say I remember any of them that well. I have some vague memories, but I feel like this was my favorite one. At the same time, I don't feel like it changed my perspective on the show that much. This still wants to lean a little too, like, meaninglessly spooky for me as a show, I feel like. I just, you know, the thing that people like about horror, the tension and the fear, I don't like those feelings, so I don't love those sorts of shows. But I have to say, watching this one episode as a 28-minute short film, it's a funny, weird, highly enjoyable short film.
Yeah, I agree. And this is sort of why I felt like it was worth a roll of the dice. You know, because it's like they're just screwing around every week, right? And it's, you know, and Duplass is such a, I think, a really talented filmmaker, you know, and an idea guy that I feel like sometimes he's really gonna nail one, you know what I mean? And then especially when you find he's in it, you know, when he's playing this sort of burnout indie musician, like it's a really good role for him. And yeah, I really enjoyed that 28 minutes. I wouldn't be like, gotta watch the show. I can't tell you that I think the next 28 minutes are gonna be as good. I don't know.
Well, part of the joy here, I think, is also I believe I again speak for both of us when I say I love him as an actor so much, and this was such a funny Duplass-y role for him. Like, that was a huge part of the appeal here, and my suspicion is he's not in any of the rest of them.
No. And I'd actually recommend this. He did The Watch a couple weeks ago to talk about the show. And one of the things that he said was he was kind of hanging around and was like just sort of waiting. He would be waiting to see if anybody dropped out at the last minute. And that was kind of, so he was kind of keeping himself in reserve to be able to fill in for somebody. And then they got to season 4 and, you know, they kind of had come to this deal. It was going to be the final season. He's like, all right, I guess we don't need to save me anymore. So I'll just be in one. And, so I don't think he's probably going to be in too many more.
I guess I would be more excited about this show if he was in all of them, just playing a different character.
I kind of feel like that too. Although I also, you know, and he got an Emmy nomination this week. I also feel like he's really good at that supporting role thing. You know what I mean? Where he's like in the movie for 10 minutes or, you know, where he kind of just sort of lets other people shine. So I think it'd be interesting to see him almost as a supporting player, I feel like.
Yeah.
In a lot
or
of ways,
Jay.
Too, I think would be sort of like, yeah.
I think
who's
Jay,
not in any of them, right? Well, I guess we just, for a couple seasons we didn't watch.
I think he might have done one or, I think he might have done an episode even that we did watch in the first season. I can't remember. But they're both such interesting, unique actors that the appeal of either of those two guys individually as a performer is probably greater to me than the appeal of this show as a concept. Again, yeah. Just because it's not really in my wheelhouse. But I did love this episode. It was funny. It was like a little spooky, but mostly just silly. And he was such a lovable and bizarre character.
Yes, he's a the character is really great. It's one of those shows. I feel like this is the kind of thing that if you were, I mean, I guess, I don't know, this is another old guy thing, right? People don't really just click around on a remote anymore, right?
Nope.
Like looking for something to watch. But if you were to be doing that, you stumbled into this late at night on HBO, like it's a worthwhile experience. That feels like sort of the perfect viewing experience for it.
Yeah.
You know, you're late, you're watching TV late at night, maybe you're not super sober.
This would have been a great thing to exist on HBO that they could have aired like Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, four episodes in a row from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. or something like that.
Yep.
And you would have stumbled into it and been like, what on earth? And watched three episodes.
I feel like these are the kinds of shows that MTV should be making instead of 38,000 episodes of Ridiculousness.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't even is Ridiculousness actually on that much, or does it just feel that way because it's on Before the Challenge and that's the only thing we watch on MTV? I don't know.
No, there was an article about it, actually, about how many episodes of Ridiculousness they aired a week, and it is like it's an insane number. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to have filler, I think you can do better.
You would think.
Yeah.
But I guess it's what rates. Like, I'm sure they're doing it for a reason.
No, yeah, everyone always does these idiotic things for what they think is a reason. It doesn't mean it's a good reason.
Yeah, well, I'm not here to defend endless episodes of Ridiculous, or even one episode of Ridiculous.
Do you know what it is?
If I'm being honest,
I honestly don't even know what it is. I assume
it's like
it looks like a very poor man's version of some combination between America's Funniest Home Videos and a show Bam Margera created.
Yeah, it's like Gen Z Funniest Home Videos, basically, right? So
I don't know.
You know
I watch 5 seconds of it every week.
There's a little bit of like that Tosh, right, me too. But it's a little bit of like that Tosh 2.0 vibe sort of, right? Where you're, combing the internet for goofy clips and then commenting on them and telling a couple jokes or whatever, right? So
yeah, I like to curate my own goofy clips from the internet, but that's just me.
I don't understand why, you know, it's another one of those things that's the theme this week is we're getting old, I guess.
No, I thought you were going to say the theme this week is I don't understand, because that leads us nicely into the film you asked me to watch.
I did, in fairness, reach out and apologize this week.
Yeah. You, in the middle of watching the movie, you were like, my bad. And you know, this is when you did that, I started thinking about like how do I talk about what's wrong here? And I decided that this is the rare film where I actually thought the execution on almost every level, from acting to directing to cinematography, was really good. And the concept was confusing and bad. Like, the conceit of what they were, not the basic conceit of a movie about Marie Curie, because that I was interested in. She's a fascinating character. But, like, the way they decided to do this is so baffling. I don't understand the constant visual illusions, not a strong enough word, the constant cutaways to nuclear disasters. What are we doing? Why are you trying to tell me Marie Curie is, like, at fault? Like, what's the... I don't get the message here. And
I think it was the idea that her creation, or her discovery, I guess is a better way to put that, is like, was growing out of beyond her control, I guess. But
how does cutting forward 150 years to a random nuclear disaster, like, I don't. And there's no context for those things. It's just like a guy walking into the reactor chamber at Chernobyl and passing out, and then like he magically appears to her late. Like, what? It's like they said, it's like they couldn't sell a Marie Curie biopic, so they threw in a bunch of weird artistic garbage that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I see. And I almost had the, I think we're coming at the same thing. I almost had the opposite conclusion of where, like, I felt like maybe there was an idea here and the problem was the execution. Cause I kept thinking like, well, why did anybody involved agree to do this? And I'm like, I bet on the page, this probably read okay. And as they were making it, you know, filming it out of order and doing whatever, like they probably thought like, ah, we're putting together a pretty, and then it just, when you get the sum of its parts, it all just turns into this kind of mess.
You know, well, yeah, like... maybe I think we're really saying the same thing. It's just
right, that's kind of what I mean.
Because because it wasn't bad performances. Rosamund Pike is good. Like the guy who played Pierre Curie, I thought was good. No, it's not like anyone was not believable. It's a fascinating life story. Like there's out there in the ether is a great biopic about Marie Curie. She's fascinating, right?
Right.
So like. A lot of these little parts, I feel like, were people did their job, but like, why?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just envisioning that on the poster.
Yeah, we all did our jobs, but why?
Matt Kolsky.
It just, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I wanted to like it because, again, like, as Dave Wanstead used to say about very bad Bears teams, all the pieces are in place.
Yes. Yes.
So this was disappointing. This was disappointing. And
who was Dave Wanstead's quarterback when he was saying all the pieces were in place?
Probably Eric Kramer.
that's about
maybe
right.
Jim Miller, you know?
All right. Do you want to segue into sports?
I guess we just did, there? Huh?
Yeah. So sports are back. NBA is back tonight. Baseball's back for at least the next couple of days.
Have you watched baseball?
I have watched a fair amount of baseball. Obviously, a lot of it has been my team. Mm-hmm. I have been watching. And I don't, you know, in terms of like, is this providing me entertainment value that's a reasonable proximity of what I would get in a normal season? Yeah. But it's the second you start to think about it at all.
Yep.
You know, that's what, to me, when it sort of starts to unravel, you know?
Yeah. Unravel is a good word choice because it is both. How your brain feels when you try to process what's really going on here, and it is also what is happening literally within the league as the Marlins are beset by COVID. When the Marlins outbreak story first happened, I thought I was going to shut the league down by the end of the week, and I think I was wrong about that because it seems like they didn't really give it to anyone outside the organization, which is also at least a little bit encouraging just in terms of it seems like playing baseball is not like an obvious contagion situation. You
yeah,
know?
I would hold off on that.
You're
I
right.
No,
you're right.
I think we need to go a few more days without seeing any Phillies come up positive. Before we make that conclusion.
Agreed, and that's where I was actually going, which is the problem here is we actually won't really know anything for still another week or two in terms of how is the virus passing or is the virus passing team to team. And because of that weird incubation period, it's possible if baseball continues behaving the way they have that they conclude everything's fine and go back to playing, and then we realize actually it wasn't fine in the first place. There's a huge outbreak and the whole sport goes down, 2 weeks from today. But
I think I do feel like there is a determination to press on here. Livelihoods be damned. You know what I mean? Health be damned. Almost.
Right. It's health be damned. Yeah. And it's, I agree with you, but I also, that's like, it's just one of those things that people say that can't be totally true. When people are like, no matter what happens, they're just going to keep playing. Well, okay, but you don't mean that literally, right? Because obviously, if seven teams died in simultaneous plane crashes, the season would go on hold. Now, I'm not saying that's likely, but, like, no one is being literal when they say they're going to keep playing no matter what. Like, there's a breaking point. What that right. is might be disturbing and disgusting, but it exists. And I am not so sure we're not getting to it.
Do you buy the notion that there is that some of the issue or the reason that things haven't just sort of completely ground to a halt is that it happened on a team that is peripheral
100%
to MLB's interest? You know what I mean? That if we were talking about an outbreak on the Yankees or the Cubs,
more to the point,
that,
I think
that season might be stopped.
Yeah, more to the point, I think it's peripheral to the nation's interests. Hell, it's peripheral to Miami's interests. although I would point out that the Marlins are atop the NL East at the moment with a 2-1 record. So I don't think there's any question. If Aaron Judge and 16 other Yankees had COVID, this would be a different conversation. I don't know that it would have shut the whole league down, but it would be a different conversation. And that,
yeah, well, look, there's all these other subtle ways, right, that you know, you don't necessarily have to have 16 positive diagnoses for this to be affecting teams. You know what I mean? Like the Braves went into their first series without either of their two starting catchers because they were both sick and they couldn't determine whether they were positive or not. You know what I mean? And the Nationals have had
problems. Juan Soto.
You know, yeah. Yep. You know, and then there are all these sort of teams that have to deal with the Marlins, like the Phillies have had 5 days off.
Yep.
And then they're going to play a doubleheader on Saturday against a team they can't play in their own country.
Yep.
And the game's maybe 7 innings each.
Yep.
So.
And I think the speed with which we got to the scrambling to avoid a shutdown sort of space is the most discouraging thing here.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it would have. Like. This general scenario is hardly shocking given the circumstances under which they're playing. The fact that they got to this point in 3 days is pretty discouraging if your goal is to get through a season, because, man, I don't know. This goes one of two ways. Either that's a lesson and guys actually start behaving much more responsibly, or it's an omen of what we're about to see across the league.
Well, and then I think is it an omen of what we're going to see in football? Because obviously there seems to be a divide in terms of process between bubble sports and non-bubble sports.
And I don't think football can't have a single bubble where everyone lives and plays. It's not possible. But we've been talking about this on the radio, and my cynical co-host Ray Ratto says, you know, football won't learn any lessons from baseball because they're too arrogant and stubborn. But I almost feel like the best case scenario for football is baseball crashing and burning hard in the next couple weeks in a way that football cannot ignore it, so that football is forced to make some concessions to the virus. Whether it's, you can create market bubbles, like there are ideas for how to do this more responsibly than baseball is right now or than football plans to. The question is whether they'll seriously engage those ideas, and I think the best way to get them to do it would be, like, baseball ending in a tire fire before mid-August.
Yeah, because you could see a scenario where you create, like, you know, eight Uh-oh. Divisional bubbles, right?
Oh, man. This is... I don't know if we should delete what I just said, but breaking news, Phillies are testing positive.
No, I think let's leave that in.
No, I was kidding. Of course, okay. Of course we're going to leave that in. But here's the ESPN piece. The Philadelphia Phillies have canceled all activities at Citizens Bank Park after a member of the coaching staff and a member of the home clubhouse staff tested positive. The team still says no players have tested positive, but yesterday they said only, you know, yesterday they said no coaches had tested positive. So
yeah. Yeah, it's, and that's a little scary too, because coaches are, you know,
coaches are mostly more at risk. That's right.
Yeah, that's
the Phillies were supposed to host the Yankees on Monday and Tuesday, and then play them in New York on Wednesday and Thursday. Instead, the Yankees started a series against the Orioles yesterday. The Blue Jays game in Philly has been postponed now from Friday. Doubleheader scheduled for Saturday, but I wonder if that will. My guess is that is now going to be postponed as well.
Yeah, it's this seems like a mess. It seems like it may just not be real possible.
Maybe I was right the first time when I thought it would be over before the end of the week. So who knows?
So NBA starts tonight. Are we Pollyannish to believe that this is just going to work out fine there?
I don't know if we're Pollyannish, and I don't know that I believe it's just going to work out fine. But here's what I believe, and this is actually to me more important than whether it works out fine in the end. I believe the process by which the NBA arrived where it has arrived is respectful and sound and cooperative. And I don't
agreed.
Think football or baseball did that. Hockey did, and they're in a similar position to the NBA. They're starting up, they're going to have their playoffs, and right now they're clean, and they're inside a bubble, and fingers crossed. Am I sure either the NBA or NHL is going to work? Not at all. I have.
Well, you can't be sure.
No.
About anything, really.
I have at best maybe like 60% confidence in those leagues to get through an entire postseason and crown a champion, right? And 60% is not great, given that most years I have a 99.99% confidence that every league is going to get through and crown a champion. But that's a significant difference. And if it breaks down, based on the way they've gotten here, I trust those sports to handle that breakdown with some level of responsibility. Now, look, the most responsible, medically responsible thing for everyone to do would have been say, no sports, we're just going to have to forego this money and change how we operate in the future forever because of it. But I understand a business not wanting to do that. And as long as everyone involved in the business and everyone that the business puts at risk in any way cooperates and agrees on how they want to do it and does it as responsibly as they can, I'm okay with it because, frankly, I want to watch sports and everyone's a consenting adult. But that doesn't describe baseball or football, and that is in part why I think we're seeing it break down so quickly and obviously.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be all about structure. Structure and testing and just – honestly, just giving a damn.
That's right.
You know,
you have to care a little bit. And look, basketball owners all care desperately about money. We know this, or else they'd be out of China and not playing right now. But they're not. They care about money a lot, and they're willing to compromise morals to some degree to make money. Just like many, many business people in the world, right?
Just like it's 75 to 80% of all of us, right?
Exactly. You know so, what I mean? So that's who they are. Don't get me wrong, but they care enough, even if it's purely for PR purposes. They care enough to do this in a way that doesn't horrify everyone,
right? Yeah, and good for them. I mean, I think it's certainly going to help the overall stock of those leagues.
I totally agree.
I mean?
And if I was baseball, like hockey is skating up my ass right now, and I'd be terrified.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, when you look at soccer worldwide, it can be done. You know, season is complete now.
The problem.
Zero positives.
Well, right. I mean, the problem, of course, is they. And they did it without a bubble. The reason they were able to do that is
Premier League had a bubble. Premier League had a bubble.
Sorry, but
They traveled, but they kept the players in a bubble. You know what I mean?
Well, that's that. But the NFL could do that. It's not a real bubble like the NBA, But the NFL could do local bubbles. That's the decision I think they have to make if they want to get this done. And that's what the Premier League did. But the difference, of course, is every other country in the world has handled the virus to some degree.
Correct. I would also say the MLS, which kind of started out like it might be a disaster, right? They're 9 games away from wrapping up that tournament, and they have been pretty good on the testing front. Once they got people inside their bubble, it's gone fairly well. So.
Exactly. And you know, we didn't bring them up originally because they're not one of the major American sports per se, but agreed. They followed. If we're splitting this into people who did their best and people who didn't, MLS goes with hockey and basketball and people who did their best, and it's more or less working out. It's not perfect. It's not totally safe, but it's more or less working out.
Yeah. What do you make of the visual entertainment experience of these fanless games so far across various sports?
In baseball, it's really awkward. It really is. It's just hard because there are so many times that the camera naturally pans to a shot where you would ordinarily see thousands of people. Thousands. In basketball, I barely notice it. Honestly. I barely notice because the benches are spread out, so there's some people there, and then they put the big video boards up, so it's not like there's a weird empty seat optic on the screen.
And it reminds me, of like you know, when – I don't know if the Lakers are still doing this, but a couple of those teams where they turn the lights out on the crowd.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
It reminds me of
the Lakers do still do that. I think the Nets do it pretty dramatically as well. Mm. And it's – I totally agree. Because that is always outside your focus, and there's almost never a situation where the camera following the action pans into the crowd. They'll show you crowd shots in a basketball game, like in and out of commercial breaks. But other than a player diving into the seats, not much. There's really no reason to show you much of the crowd. Whereas baseball, when you're watching the ball, it's almost every at bat you see a shot that would ordinarily have thousands of people in it.
Yeah, I'm surprised that baseball has not employed more tarps.
Agreed.
I think that's worked well in soccer.
Yep.
You know, putting kind of tarping up and putting up banners and things like that where
something that catches the eye, something that catches the eye that's not an empty seat, I think is a good move. The crowd noise stuff, I kind of like it. Like I like that sports sound like they always sounded. But I don't know. It depends. I really hated the fake crowd people on Fox, like the video game bots. That disturbed me.
The fake visual is jarring. The fake audio, particularly for some sports, I don't mind at all. Like I kind of like it in soccer. I've watched some games with it and without, and I think I prefer it with.
I tend to agree because you're like it makes it feel like the thing you're used to.
Yeah. I feel like in the NBA, I don't know that I'm going to want it. You know, I haven't really watched much of the
I've been watching the scrimmages. And I think I'm not great at tracking this stuff because I'm the rare animal that mostly just focuses on the game when he's watching. So, like, other than like in baseball, I'm aware that there's noise that makes it sound like baseball normally does. But I just don't think about that it's fake noise all that much. It's just like background noise, right?
Yeah.
My instinct in the basketball is that it has more been stadium operator noise than fake crowd noise. So like they're playing, you know, songs and defense chants and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I hate that noise, honestly, when in real basketball situations.
Yeah,
like
especially
the general
when you're there.
Noisiness of an NBA game is
it's oppressive.
Oppressive. Yeah, exactly.
Jinx.
So yeah, I'll be curious to see how that impacts my experience when we watch tonight, you know.
No doubt. No doubt. It'll be interesting, and I'm not sure exactly how I don't know if there are ways in which these, you know, regular season games are going to look different or more upgraded in some way than what I've been watching in the scrimmages. I'm not sure if that's a thing, but I don't know. It's going to be exciting, and you don't have to wait too long, man. 3:30 Pacific, Utah and New Orleans. Get ready.
Oh, I didn't realize there's going to be afternoon basketball.
I guess it's 5:30 for you, but still.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will be ready for that. Where were you? What was your take on the Lou Williams thing?
Just send. It's like when athletes get caught with weed at an airport or something. Like, don't you have a cousin or a brother or just a good friend that you can send to the strip club to pick up the wings?
Yeah, it to me it was just one of those things that, like, it's such an Atlanta thing. Like, yeah, everyone from Atlanta was you thought it totally plausible that,
oh, to be clear,
he would just go to Magic City to get wings.
I 100% believe his story. Like, because we know he, it's not like he made up the funeral to go to a strip club. Like, the guy actually went to a family member's funeral, and that's, of course he should leave the bubble for that. And if they want wings, get them at Magic City if those are the best wings. I don't know. I haven't spent time in Atlanta, but I,
they have wings, like the flavor of wings named after him on the menu.
Exactly. Like, so I get it.
The man likes the wings.
I totally believe the story. Just you got to be smarter. You have to send somebody else to pick them up.
Send a person, right? Like, yeah, exactly. People have to start thinking about quarantine or whatever. So,
and I'm guessing like Lou Will is, you know, the wealthiest guy in the room and buying the wings for the, you know, wake or whatever it is. But you got to send an emissary. You can't.
Yeah.
You
got to
be
go,
at
fly
the strip
out
club.
By, man.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the deal. But I think it's going to be fine. I have a feeling that Lou Will might have thought, you know, I don't really need to do the next 10 days.
Maybe, although it is going to include some regular season games. I think for a team like the Clippers, those really don't matter.
In normal circumstances, the Clippers were not taking regular season games super seriously.
That's a good point.
You know, I can't imagine that Lou Will's too broken up about missing a few of those. So, but we'll see. I'm excited, you know, for the NBA tonight just to see, you know, how it's going to feel to have it back. And, I think largely because of what we talked about earlier, that we have at least a higher than 50% degree of confidence that they actually may be able to pull this off.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Obviously we both want to see it.
All right. You want to do homework?
Yup. Wait, hold on. Why do I feel like we missed something? Nope, we didn't.
Well, we didn't. Yeah, we're good, I think.
We're good.
All right, so there's a new season of Umbrella Academy this week.
Yep.
You're pretty fired up for this. I'm
excited. This is my kind of thing. I like, weird fantastical storytelling. But I do think Umbrella Academy was, you know, it's weird and there's some supernatural stuff, but I don't think it was so out of pocket that you couldn't enjoy it. And it was really well made and acted. So I'm hoping it appeals to you as well.
Yeah. You know, I bailed on season one. I've heard some noises that this is a slightly better season. So I'm willing to give it another shot. We're also going to check out Last Chance U. Now, neither of us have watched prior seasons of this, correct?
Right. This is season 5. And it takes place in my hometown, Oakland, California, at Laney College. If you don't know Last Chance U, it is a TV show by the same creator who made the documentary series Cheer on Netflix that we talked about a few months ago. And it tracks JC, community college level football players. And it's a, you know, docu-series following guys who have ended up at community college for one reason or another, but many of whom are incredibly talented football players and using this opportunity to make their way in life in some way. So it's should be good. And Oakland represent.
Right. And the Cheer thing actually, oddly enough, gets me fired up. This does sort of seem like the show, kind of show that we should have been watching this whole time and
yeah, a little bit
escaped us for whatever reason. Yep. You know what I mean? There is a Go-Go's documentary on Showtime Sunday nights. or Friday night rather, excuse me. But probably lots of other times too. We're going to check that out. I'm kind of excited about that. We were sort of talking about how the Go-Go's are underrated significance wise, I think, in music history. So,
yeah, I think that's true. I think so we'll be, the Runaways get all the credit for being a lady rock band, and the Go-Go's probably deserve more.
Yeah, and we're clearly way bigger. That's, you know, I think I feel like sort of undisputable. Yeah. And then I'll Be Gone in the Dark, the HBO True Crime series wraps up. So I think we'll kind of do a wrap up of that. And then I think we have, I don't know if famously is the right word, but I think we've been pretty out in front on being just out on Perry Mason. We're getting back in because a lot of people have said it's gotten really good. So, you know.
And to be fair, we had high expectations going in, and we like a lot of the acting. And it's if people are right, it won't be the first time a show took a few episodes to get going. That said, I'm not excited about this.
No, me neither. but again, a lot of people said it's going to be good, and you're right. I think that certainly sometimes shows need more than a couple episodes to find their stride, and I can think of a few in recent history that we didn't really like after the first couple that really came around, including Succession, right? Remember? So
yeah, I think we were a little slow in on Succession. So yeah, you're right.
So there are more of those examples out there. So hopefully it found its stride. It's certainly some good people involved, and it would be good. I've been annoyed that there's been a big Sunday night HBO hole in my life. So it would be nice if that didn't necessarily have to exist.
Oh, man. Just looking at – you mentioned it, the Go-Go's documentary. It's called The Go-Go's, by the way. It apparently they're also going to have the first new Go-Go song in 20 years.
All right.
Also coming out tomorrow.
On streaming services everywhere. Speaking of coming out on streaming services everywhere, we sort of talked about this during the week. Do you have any desire to discuss the Taylor Swift record?
Oh yeah. Yes. I listened to it so we could talk about it.
Oh, you did. You actually listened to it. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it now or do you want to talk about it next week?
No, let's do it now. It's timely. It's in the zeitgeist.
It is in the zeitgeist. So did you land on this is the Taylor Swift record you've always wanted. It's genius. She's done it again, et cetera, et cetera. Or are you more where I'm at, which is, you know, it's okay.
So the album is called Folklore, right?
The album's called Folklore. Yeah. She made it with Jack Antonoff, she's made a lot of records with, and with the Desner brothers from The National.
Yeah,
and a little bit of help from Bon Iver, who does vocals on a song. So you know, it's her "quote unquote" indie songwriter record.
You know? And I think that's an accurate description of it. The first song excited me a little bit, and then it's fine. And I guess if you wanted me to synthesize thoughts on this album, they would be this. Taylor Swift is a tremendously talented songwriter and pop musician. I wouldn't debate that at all. This album is clearly designed to be, as you said, sort of her indie record. And she really channels, and you can hear it. Like, you can pretty much, from five bars of any song, say, this is an Antonoff, this is a Desner, right?
Yeah.
This is a Vernon. You can just hear it. It's quite obvious. And that's fine. Those are stylistic choices that are totally cool. I honestly think I'd rather just listen to Shake It Off.
Yeah, You know, I was going to say I'd rather just the National or Bon Iver. But,
see, I don't like the National or Bon Iver because they're doing exactly what Taylor Swift is doing for most of this song, which is, you know, singing softly over quiet, intricate indie rock music, and I find it very boring.
It's a very long record, too, by the way,
it's
right?
So
16
long.
Songs.
It's over an hour. And it's all... Again, that like, oh, here's it's first of all, the Jack Antonoff songs are generally my least favorite style of Jack Antonoff song. I prefer the, you know, bleachers standing on the highway overpass Jack Antonoff. But these are, I think, good songs, good, sad indie songs, you know, and a lot of them would fit fine as a Taylor Swift feature on a Bon Iver or Iron and Wine album, you know? I just don't like that music. And I don't think she's so exceptional at it that she has to be doing it. So I'd rather hear her do what she's really spectacular at, which is make bouncy, fun, pretty awesome pop songs. Because I'm not a Taylor hater. Like, that's what she does that great. It's not my favorite part of the music world, but she's great at it, and I Shake It Off is on all of my like let's party playlists. Like, I'm not hating, I just think I'd rather have her do that.
Yeah, I think we're coming at this from fairly same perspectives. I enjoy you know, the National and Bon Iver a lot more than you do. But and I certainly would agree that, you know, Taylor is super talented and like where she is in the music industry for a reason. Like, I'm, you know, I'm not a Taylor Swift denier per se. But I don't think that her talents are particularly well suited to these songs. And I don't think that they generally work all that well, with like an exception or two. The Betty song, I think, is super interesting. But that's, you know, way towards the back portion of that record. You know, you're an hour in almost at that point. So it's, you know, I just think like good for her. And I think it's cool that she does take some artistic detours and gambles. You know, she's certainly been willing to do that. I just don't know that this one is all that successful. And it's weird because I feel like culturally that's not really a thing you're allowed to say anymore. Or, it, you know, it's sort of, if you say that, then you're painted as some sort of retrograde sexist or something. You know what I mean? And, you know, I don't feel that way. I just don't
like this
care for most of her work all that much. You know what I mean? I'm with you. 1984 is a pretty great record, and I feel like that's
1984 would be a very different record.
This is the Van Halen. I wouldn't mind that detour. Let's have her cover a Van Halen record.
Yeah.
See what that sounds like.
Yeah, sure.
I bet her version of Jump would sound fucking awesome.
Exactly. But you know what? See, but exactly. That's it. So I'd rather hear you play a cover album full of 80s rock anthems than this, which and I'll defer to your greater knowledge because it's just not my shit, this type of music. So if you say she's not doing a particularly good version, to me it sounds like, again, it sounds just as good as the National to me. That's how I feel about it. So I don't want to diss it in its vein. I just don't know why it's important for her to do this vein. That said, she's an artist. She can do whatever she wants.
She certainly can. And, you know, I think she's going to sell a lot of records. And I think this record is going to be looked back at generally fondly. But to me, like, I don't know, like, I'd almost rather put on like one of those like you know, 70s California with the canyon, what do they call that, that genre of music, you know what I mean? Like,
I'd
rather put on a Linda Ronstadt record.
Oh, sure.
What I'm saying. Or certainly a Fleetwood Mac record from that period, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because I think that's the platonic ideal of the thing that she's really kind of trying to do here.
Yeah, that I think that sounds right. I think that sounds right. And those things would definitely interest me more than this. But I don't know. I guess I have gotten to a place in my life where I have total respect for what Taylor Swift usually or often does, and I not only respect but quite enjoy an album like 1989. And this to me is like, okay, I get you want to stretch your creative legs in a different direction, but I don't know that there's anything here that would make this essential or particularly better than any of her other output, that's for sure.
Yeah. At the end of the day, not our shit.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There you go.
There you go. All right.
There's your lukewarm Taylor Swift review to wrap up the podcast. I feel good. I feel good.
All right. Yeah. I think we can get out of here on that.
Okay. We already did homework. Get to it, people. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling and the jello is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.